Good afternoon. We would like to welcome you to the August 13th meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes in new development. This board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic noise, and impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Personal preference will also not be the basis for a decision. Before we move into the agenda today, staff has been receiving an unusually large number of emailed public comments. I just want to take a moment and remind the public of the policies, which are on the website, critical information section, and that failure to follow the policy may result in comments not being attached to the agenda. Public comments, this is how the policy reads. Members of the public wishing to address the board during public comments can submit written comments, call in, or speak in person. Those wishing to address the board by telephone or virtually will need to pre-register for the meeting as set forth above or by calling the MPC office at 912-651-1440 and providing your name, address, telephone number, and we will be using your email address. Once registered, a link with additional instructions will be emailed. Each speaker is allowed a 2 to 3 minutes to provide comments, and then they may be muted at the direction of the chairwoman to move to the next speaker in the queue. The chairman may elect to provide the speaker additional time to speak. All written comments must be submitted by 9 a.m., 2 days prior to the scheduled board meeting, by emailing the respective department director. Alternatively, written comments may be delivered to the MPC's office at 110 East State Street, Savannah, Georgia. I'm assuming since I am reading this before all of you, there were some comments that maybe came in after the deadline. So if you do not see your written comment as part of the public record, check to make sure that you followed the guidelines provided on the MPC website. Moving into the agenda, signposting. Members of the board receive packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not posted this month? Hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Bear with me, there's a great number of items on the consent agenda this month. So we have item number 1, file number 23-0054-5542 for 119 MLK. Item number 2, petition file number 25-003087 for 702 West Oglethorpe. Petition number 3, file number 25-002778 for 406 West Wayne Street. Item number 4, file number 25-003435 for 215 East Jones Street. Item number 5, file number 25-003526 for 411 West Bay Street. Item number 6, file number 25-003538 through 316 West Taylor Street. Item number 7, file number 25-003437 for 339 West Charlton Street. Item number 8, file number 25-003436 for 111 Barnard Street. Item number 9, file number 25-003429 for 456 Price Street. Item number 10, file number 25-003430 for 527 Howard Street, number 11, file number 25-003197 for 511 East Harris Street. Item number 12, file number 25-003523 for 409 East Perry Street. Item number 13, file number 25-003525 for 411 East Perry Street. Is there any member of the public or a board member who wishes to remove an item from consent agenda to the regular agenda? Hearing none, is there a motion for approval of the consent agenda?
Rowan, so moved.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. We have a motion to approve consent by Ms. Rowan. Do I have a second?
Woodfield, second.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the consent agenda is approved. If your item was on the consent agenda, you are welcome to leave or stay as you like. Moving on to adoption of the final agenda as presented, is there a motion for an approval of the agenda?
Rowan, so moved.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. We have a motion to approve the agenda from Rowan. Do I have a second?
Approve.
Is that a second from Helms? Thank you, Mr. Helms. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion to approve the agenda has been approved and is passed. Approval of the minutes. Minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda and posted online. Is there a motion to approve the June 11th meeting minutes?
Woodfield, I approve that. I move that we approve the June 11th meeting minutes.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. There's a motion from Woodfield to approve the June 11th meetings. Do I have a second?
Helms, second.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion to approve the minutes has been approved and passed. Items requested to be removed from the final agenda. We do have one. It's item number 18 on the final agenda, the petition of Hanson Architects for file number 25-003535.
Oops, sorry. It's Lynch Architects.
I'm sorry. Item 15. I should probably wear my glasses that are on the top of my head. Sorry. Item number 15. Sorry, I was using my old agenda before the meeting. Petition of Lynch Architects, file number 24-004958 for 20 through 24 East Oglethorpe Avenue. Is there a motion to approve the items requested to be removed from the final agenda?
Rowan, so moved.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Is there a second?
Nagel, second.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, that item has been removed from the final agenda. Moving on to the continued agenda. These applications have been requested to be continued to the following meeting. We do have one item, item number 16, the petition of Whitfield Signs, file number 25-003434 for 3 West Perry Street. Is there a motion to continue this item?
So move, Helms.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Is there a second?
Nagel, second.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion to approve the continued agenda has been approved and has passed. We do not have any requests for extensions, so we will move on to the regular agenda. Staff will present each application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less, and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance or questions raised by the board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. The board will then enter into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairwoman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member 2 times for comment. You do not have to provide comment if you do not have any. If you are joining us virtually, locate your control panel. Public that wishes to comment, use the raise your hand feature. If you're joining us live in the studio audience and you wish to speak, make sure you fill out a speaker card with your name and the item number that you wish to add your public comments. The first item up on the regular agenda is item number 17, the petition of Coastal Canvas, Austin Webb, file number 25-001937 for 115 East River Street.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the project. The applicant is requesting approval for the installation of an expanded replacement awning on the storefront located at 115 East River Street. The request also includes a special exception to allow for a reduced minimum vertical clearance of the awning from 8 feet to 6.5 feet. So just a little context and surrounding area, 115 East River Street is part of a building from 1857 and is a contributing resource. The building also fronts on Bay Street and is home to multiple businesses. The ground level on the River Street side is currently the restaurant Huey's. Along River Street, there are several businesses with various awning heights that are based on the available height of the first floor of the buildings. As seen in this image, we can see how just looking kind of down from Huey's, there's various awning styles, heights, types, but much of it is based on what's available on that first floor, first level. It's likely that not all of these meet that 8-foot clearance due to the existing conditions. So for the special exception criteria, it's going to be focused on the clearance above the sidewalk here in this diagram. So for the special exception criteria, we're looking at whether the use for which the special exception is being considered would be located, operated, and maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan and the provisions of the ordinance. The criterion is met specifically with the provisions of the ordinance regarding the design standards for awnings. The second is whether the special exception would not be detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and appearance of the adjacent uses or general vicinity. The vertical clearance of 6.5 feet instead of 8 feet would not be detrimental. Due to the height of the first floor where the restaurant is, it is not possible to install it at a higher point because there is a gutter and a balcony above it. So you can see in this image here and here, there's a gutter, then there's that balcony for that second story restaurant. So you know, this is not a hardship created by the applicant. It's just an existing condition. Staff found for the special exception that the criteria are met and doesn't recommend any additional conditions for that. With regard to the Secretary of the Interior standards, the only item that's proposed to be removed is this shallow, non-historic awning. It does not involve removal of historic materials or alterations that would mischaracterize the property. Awnings have been seen historically along River Street and also in modern times. The presence of a clearly modern awning will not create a false sense of historical development. And as mentioned, there are several examples of awnings all up and down River Street. That awning here has not acquired historical significance in its own right, and it will not impact the character-defining feature, such as the storefront windows and features found on other stories of the building. For visual compatibility for materials, texture, and color, the colors provided are these two shades of green. It's a sunbrella material, which is like a canvas type. So you can see, and also just to kind of show the diagrams of what's being proposed. For the awning design standards for configuration, installations extending above the public right-of-way shall have a minimum vertical clearance of 8 feet above the sidewalk. So since this is not met, that is the reason for the special exception request. For the other standards, awnings and canopies shall be integrated structurally and architecturally into the design of the facade. It shall not obscure the character-defining features of historic facades. Backlit awnings shall be prohibited. There's no illumination included here. And awnings shall not connect to facades. So those standards are met. And then the rest of the awning standards have to do with the material. So it says shall be constructive canvas, other equivalent cloth, metal, or glass, and sunbrella is an equivalent material. It's approved on a pretty frequent basis. So that, with those standards, staff finds they are met and thus recommends approval of the proposal to install a replacement awning as requested because the project is visually compatible and meets the standards, and to approve the special exception request from the standard that reads, installations extending above the public right-of-way shall have a minimum vertical clearance of 8 feet above the sidewalk to allow for a vertical clearance of 6.5 feet above the sidewalk because the special exception criteria are met. Thank you. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for staff? All right. Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner like to come forward and please state your name for the record? Is the petitioner with us? Yep.
Hey, my name is Austin Webb.
Thank you, Austin. Did you have anything that you wanted to add?
No, thank you.
Okay. Are there any questions for the petitioner?
I have a couple questions, please.
All right.
Woodfield, are you representing the awning company?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Have you considered that the sign could be less than 24 inches tall?
That would not comply with recommended sunbrella, like watershed pitch requirements.
So you're basing that thickness on the slope of the canvas so it will drain?
Correct, ma'am.
Okay. Are you replacing the center part of the awning, the entrance awning?
We are, and it is a replica.
Okay. Have you considered making it 4 feet deep instead of 5 feet deep? You know, that this issue of 6'6", you're pretty tall, you have a hat on. Don't you think that's a pretty low height for an object in a public right-of-way?
It is the same height that is currently there, and I don't believe it's presented an issue.
At the entrance?
Correct.
So the entrance is 6 or 7, 8 feet wide? This whole sign is 70 feet long?
Oh, well, currently there's that, what she described as like not deep projection awning on the side. This is the same width as that.
Yes, but no one is going to walk under that since it's so close to the building. But if this is an awning that's projected over the sidewalk.
People will be sitting under it, potentially.
Or walking? Isn't it a public right-of-way?
It's unless they're walking right against the window, I don't think it will intrude on that.
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Were there additional questions for the petitioner?
I have an additional question.
Mr. Helms?
You say that this is a 5-foot deep awning, correct?
Correct.
And you say that people won't be walking under it?
Well, they'll walk under it to enter the restaurant.
Yeah, but I mean, are they allowed to put tables under it? I didn't know that you were allowed to put tables on a right of way in the city.
I'll answer that one. This is Caitlin. That is a matter that real estate services would handle with the city. So
okay. I'm just curious. Yeah. Does real estate services approve having tables on public right of way?
They have. I can't speak for them on what their criteria is, but I just know they're the ones that the permitting would be for that.
Okay,
I believe,
so
there's an
if they don't permit them, we do have to worry that people would have to walk under this awning on a sidewalk.
Let's see. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's definitely part of along the walkway. It would not cover the entire sidewalk here, but it would cover some of it. But if they do have seating, you know, that would clearly be an area kind of marked off for that.
No further questions. I'm not sure it's within our purview, but I'm not sure.
The application for seating certainly is not, but the design of the awning is. Were there any other questions for the petitioner?
Nagel, how wide is that sidewalk? How much does it extend out? How much does it leave room for people to walk without bumping into the 6-foot awning?
I have it in my diagram. I can pull it out for you. It is 151 inches from the building to the sidewalk.
So that's 12 and a half feet. So you're taking pretty much half the sidewalk.
I believe
5 out of 12 and a half.
I believe like 60 inches is less than half of
five.
Close. Thank you.
Yeah.
40%.
The awning that currently exists above the doorway is currently 5 feet extended from the building, and we are replicating that one.
Ooh,
the ones on the side. The ones to the next to it is 4 feet.
Oh, you mean the one on the other building?
At the entrance, over the doorway.
So
can you make that bigger?
We're gonna.
Yeah. Can they see that?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that was live.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the awning that you are currently looking at that is over this doorway, we are making an exact replica of that.
Well, now you've also answered the question about seating. I already have approval. Maybe not for the whole width, but certainly for part of it.
Can I make a comment, please, Woodfield? So the slope on the entry side is not the same slope as you're proposing for the awning.
Correct. Well, no, the slope that for the – so this is a multi-part frame awning, but it will be one cover. We are replicating what is currently there above the doorway. There is a separate projection to the sides of this awning.
Yes, I understand that. And you're proposing two different slopes that the entry door awning is a shallow slope, but you need a steeper slope over the rest of the 70-foot awning, which is causing it to be 6'6" above the sidewalk. That's, you can see the doors are hardly
the
matching
bottom,
that.
Yes, we are meeting the bottom of what is currently there. We will not be any lower than what is currently at Huey's. Our projection on the side, sides of the awning is slightly more, but the bottom clearance of the awning is the same.
Of the entry awning?
Correct.
Yes, I understand, but that's sort of an entryway to a building, which is special to your building, but you have a 70-foot building frontage that you want to put a 6'6" awning on top of. I'm concerned that that is a health safety issue because it's very low. So, thank you for clarifying what you're intending to do, what you would like to do.
Are there any other questions for the applicant?
Helen, I have one more question. What would be the consequence if you, instead of having a 2-foot drop, you had a 1-foot drop? Okay, it's not what Sunbrella recommends, but what would be the consequence?
Correct. Like, what is currently there is the minimum of what I can provide with the fabric.
But I'm asking that's the recommendation from the manufacturer.
The consequence would be pulling water on the top of the awning. It would not shed properly off of the front, which is the intention of the awning.
Or something like that under the fabric so it wouldn't pool.
Yes, the water would rest on top of the awning, causing it to sag.
Unless there was more support for it, effectively.
No, it does not matter. You could have more support. It would still pull water.
I know. I'm debating whether that's our problem.
Are there any other questions for the applicant?
No further.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I don't have any public comment cards. Do we have anyone joining us online?
No, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Since there's no public comment, we'll now enter into board discussion and no further public comment can be heard. And you can remain or take your seat.
Thanks.
Thank you. At this time, we'll enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Mr. Helms, I'll start with you.
I'm going to defer at this point.
Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
Having had to answer to public officials for many, many years, you know, this is substandard, 6'6". I mean, they're saying 80 inches, 6'8". It feels to me it is, I believe, according to official standards, a very low awning protruding 5 feet into the public right of way. It is not meeting our ordinance. If it was a little closer to, you know, someplace higher above a person's head, but there are people who are 6'5" or 6" with shoes, with a hat. I mean, I think people could hurt themselves here and it could be a health safety feature. It is not a private area for their tables. So I think there could be some modifications to the design to keep the idea of the awning, but have it higher so that it is not such a health safety barrier.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Hamer? Thank you, Ms. Nagel.
I understand the concern with people bumping into it because the current smaller portion of the awning does not project. So, of course, people haven't bumped into it because it's not there. I see why we can't make it higher because the building itself, the way that it is right now, there's that gutter on top. So I understand the need for the variance. I would recommend considering making it shorter than the 5.5-foot extension, but I also see how that would fall in the middle of, you know, dripping on the tables that would be under it. So with a conundrum that it is in terms of making it any shorter for people not to bump into it, I think 6'8" would be enough of a clearance. I would still ask the petitioner to perhaps recommend making it slightly shorter, but I would be in support of the variation for the minimal vertical clearance. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Helms?
I think I would go along with Ms. Nagel that if it were 6'8" or 6'9" and 4.5 feet, that is already meaningfully better. There are people who are 6'9", but there are fewer of them than there are lots of 6'6"s around.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Rowan?
I'm in agreement with staff's decision. I feel like there's still enough room on the walkway or sidewalk for people to walk past. And I do understand that the awning needs to be a certain depth in order to have tables under them, under it. And to Ms. Nagel's point, if it's any shorter, there would be water dripping onto the tables. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Ms. Woodfield?
No further comment.
Ms. Hamer?
I just wanted to add that the typical clearance required per code is 80 inches for egress. So this would be compliant with that and is in its existing state. So just wanted to add that.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Ms. Nagel?
No further comment.
Thank you. At this time, I will entertain a motion. Rowan? I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition 115 East River Street, 25-001-937-COA as requested because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Do you want to include the special exception?
Yes. And including the special exception in the approval of the special exception requested. Thank you, Ms. Rowan. The motion on the floor is to approve the awning as requested because the project is visually compatible and meets the standard, and also approve the special exception request as presented. Do I have a second?
Hamer, second.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Mr. Helms, how do you vote?
I defer for a moment.
I can come back to you, certainly. Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Nay.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Thank you. The ayes have it. That application is approved. Next up on the regular agenda is the petition of Hansen Architects, Patrick Phelps, file number 25-003535 for 401 through 409 East Bay Street. Caitlin, I'll hand it over to you.
All right, thank you. This is Caitlin again, presenting 401 to 409 East Bay Street. The applicant is requesting approval for new construction parts 1 and 2 for the property located at 401 to 409 East Bay Street. This project request is a revision of a previously approved design. The materials from the previously approved project remain the same, thus the reason for part 1 and part 2 being reviewed together in this case. So just a little project history. Part one, height and mass, was initially approved on September 11th, 2024 with no conditions. And part two, design details, was approved on November 13th, 2024 with no conditions. The previously approved design was attached to the agenda for reference. And most recently, on June 11th, 2025, an amendment to the project was presented to the board. Staff recommended approval, but the board had concerns that parts of the project had changed too much to be considered an amendment and discussed the need to reapply with because of the change of the designs. So there were proposed amendments, including some material application changes, not that the materials themselves changed, but just how they were applied, and some of the height additions, which would be on buildings B and C. So we'll just kind of look at the overall view. This is the surrounding area of what it looks like currently. Let's see if I can get that a little bigger. This is along the Bay Street side. This is the lane side here. And the existing site plan as it currently looks today. And we have, this was the previously approved and the currently proposed. So just to kind of go over a little bit, this is what's been approved. This is what came about last month. And then the changes that are proposed today are seen here. So some of this, all right, just showing a few more different renderings also of the same before and after. So this is all currently on the approved project. And then here's what we're seeing today for changes. So this was continued at the last meeting for partial and approved partly. So building A, this is the new construction on the right. That was approved as requested, but then there was a continuance for buildings B and C to allow the applicant time to address visual compatibility concerns. So the petitioner requested the project return for the August 13th meeting to allow time to address the concerns. So proposed changes include for building A, reduced floor heights, revised window configurations, revised entry, and decorative terracotta water table, which I believe was all approved already, but just wanted to make, you know, just go over that again as a refresher. Building B, they did add a fourth floor with a gable roof set back from the stories below. Now we're seeing, here's where, what's being considered now. The building C also added a fourth floor penthouse and modified the window configuration. So there is an additional floor added onto those, but in the time since the last meeting, the design has been modified to try to reflect a more visually compatible with the with this building, with everything within its view shed. So we're seeing this is what, again, approved context and just the difference between that and what's now being proposed. So there was on the approved design, there was a gable roof on this rear building that's been changed to dormers to a flat roof, and then the exterior siding was wood, changed to stucco. The visual representation of the approved, you know, has been shown in a variety of ways, but I will note that the petitioner does have a very detailed presentation and will probably do a much better job explaining this. But just to kind of go over a little more detail, the materials, as I noted, have been not changed at all, but we do still have the sample boards here if anybody would like to see them. And then, as mentioned in the pre-meeting, we did show this the model, but if anybody wanted to see it again, we'd be happy to pass it around if anybody does. But with staff found that with the changes, as previously recommended, that would still recommend approval with new construction as requested, part one and part two as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you. I'll be happy to take any questions or turn it over to the petitioner.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there questions for Caitlin on this application? Ms. Hamer.
Hamer. I just had a question about the building B, the contributing resource. So has all the materials, were they all previously approved? Like, was there a part two that was previously approved?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So the painting of the historic brick was already approved?
Yes, that was, I think it's actually stucco.
Okay.
So you can confirm. But yeah, that was previously approved.
Thank you.
Yep. And that was based on a historic photo also.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Were there additional questions for Caitlin? Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, Patrick Phelps with Hanson Architects. Hope everybody's doing well today. Thank you, Caitlin. Appreciate the review. Just to kind of summarize, I know we're on our third meeting now, but we did get full approval at the first meeting for parts one, fourth meeting. Second meeting was part two, and we got full approval on that. We submitted an amendment, and that was the discussion based on the number of changes that were made that the board felt that there was some questioning about whether be submitted as an amendment or part one and part two resubmittal. We did get approval on the corner building of Bay and Habersham, and then a continuance on the addition to the contributing building and the addition to the non-contributing building. In the resubmittal, again, we met with staff and we just felt that it was better to just go ahead and resubmit part one and part two. And I guess based on the agenda, voting procedures, would that be part one and part two all together or separate? I hope that you guys work that out in a discussion. But so last meeting, when we did get approval on the corner building and then the continuance on the other two buildings, a lot of discussion, but what we've heard was that there was a preference of the architectural style of the addition to the contributing building, which we've reverted back to the original amendment and with some of the same language. And then overall reduction of the scale in two areas. One would be in the relationship of the addition to the contributing building and the building that would be on the corner of Habersham and Bay. And then also the relationship of all of the buildings to the lane and the lane architecture, more residential style on the other side. So I will walk through some of the things that we've done to address those concerns. Starting with the floor plan, and these were proposed in the amendment changes, but I'll just revisit those. So on the existing, you can see this upper area. Let me see if I can get that a little bigger for everybody. So this is our lobby space, and then we had guest rooms on the ground floor in that corner building. So the change in the amendment and in proposed today is an enlargement. We've moved the stair back and enlarged the public space in the hotel and in the lobby, which in turn gives more public access along both Bay Street and Habersham and visibility of public active space and removes guest rooms on the ground floor and then opens up windows along for fitness center and amenities along Habersham Street rather than guest rooms. And then on the upper floors, we've made some adjustments to the rooms to make them larger in size to provide better amenities. But pretty much the layout's the same. The window spacing does change. So that was reflected in the corner building, which was also approved. But as part of this submittal, in order to get the relationship of the height of the buildings along the lane, better in scale with the residential, we've taken this entire footprint highlighted in pink and lowered that first level from 16 feet to 13 feet. So there's a 3-foot elevation change there. And then we've taken the floors above and reduced them overall in height, 8 inches each. So we have about a 5.5-foot reduction in height. And this would be reduce the building in height, but we have added the fourth floor. So there is an overall increase in height of about 2 foot, 10 inches from the previous submittal. You can see the approved submittal here. Get that side by side for you. So the top is the approved, and that'll be the sequence of the slides from here on. And the bottom is proposed. Again, we've reduced the floor-to-floor heights of the upper floors for the additions and also lowered the floor-to-floor height of the first floor. So we were able to squeeze in the additional fourth floor, but only increase the overall height about 2 foot, 10 inches from the previous submittal. And so the magenta line that you see was the approved height of the building. And now you can see the new proposed height. The language of the addition to the contributing building, we reverted back to more of the industrial storefront. All of that is north facing. So it'll provide, you know, more of a consistent backdrop. I know in the amendment, we had proposed a solid building with punched openings, a pitch shed roof to try to reduce the scale of it. But this, we were able to just lower the entire height of the building nearly to where it was in the approved submittal. And then on the addition to the non-contributing building, we do set back the fourth floor addition from the Bay Street elevation. Also, there's about a 10-foot setback from the contributing historic residence next door. And then there's a setback from the lane too that I'll show you later. So that'll, from the lane view, that penthouse addition really becomes sort of obscured. This is really just the Habersham Street elevation. So we had the corner building, which the fenestration has changed. Again, we've moved the elevator location, which opened up that lobby space. And then one thing that we extended into this corner building was the lowering of the finished floor heights, because we felt that that also is this on, if Bay Street is on your left, then you've got Bay Lane on your right. And then beyond that would be the 2- and 3-story residential structures. So we've dropped the roof line of that back building about 5 feet. So that further encourages stepping down to the lane and helping with the scale. And again, you can see the magenta line of that previously approved elevation. The equipment screening, which is the lighter gray, is set back. So you're really going to, the visible cornice line would be this darker line here. So that entire corner line from the lane steps down to reflect towards the residential. And then on the lane, we had the punched openings and metal panel facade, 2-story addition. And then we had the cottage in the back with more of a pitched roof with dormers, wood siding, and stucco base. We are proposing that that be changed. We've lowered the floor-to-floor heights, so the scale sort of stays the same as the addition. We're setting back the light gray area of the 3-story addition to the contributing building so that the view from the lane, this cornice line right along here is really what you're going to be seeing before it steps back and for those additional fourth floors. And again, you can see the magenta line here, the previously approved. We also were able to remove a stair tower pop-up, so that was a big impact on the lane. And then with the flat roof, we made the decision that the building should emulate more of a masonry-type building, and so it would be coated in stucco of different colors. And then we've also changed the window fenestration to be more residential with single double-hung windows rather than the double casements that were before. The penthouse on that is set back on the roof. And then again, contributing building on the right, historic, so it's set back from that as well. And perspective views, there was the approved Bay Street elevation and the proposed Bay Street elevation. So you can see where we've kept the language of the 2-story addition on the, I'm sorry, 3-story addition on the contributing building. Pretty much the same, and then language of the cottage building in the back changes. And then some overall perspectives. So again, the comment of adjusting the scale to lower it so that this corner building remains prominent. And then around the corner, you can see we've created a greater step down to relate to the residential. And you can see the step downs or step backs in the lane here and here. And the change of architectural language from the lane building from wood siding to stucco. We've also added some detailing along the neighbor's property because that is visible. There's a parking area and a courtyard there. And then if you look at our site sections, you can see, I think it's more important just to show you the proposed changes. Again, the magenta is the previous roof line. So if you're standing in the lane looking up, we've set back the building, which is in the hatched area, so that it's minimally visible from the lane, and then you can see from Bay Street. And then this would be through the addition to the non-contributing building. You can see that the roof line of the pitched roof before is pretty much the roof line cornice of the proposed. And then we've set back that addition so that it's not visible from the lane. And then overall heights of what was approved. Nope, I'm sorry. This is what is proposed. And in context with adjacent buildings, so you've got roof lines of existing residential buildings that vary from 17 up to 33 feet. Our cornice line that's going to be adjacent to the lane is at 33 feet. And of course, we step back to around 43 feet. And then the building on the corner, that has dropped down from 50 to 45 feet. And again, this is on Habersham looking across. So you see more of the residential context and how we've stepped the building down at the corner. And on Bay, you now start to see that stair stepping of the residential context as it moves into the more commercial and ultimately on the corner building. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Phelps. Are there questions for the petitioner? Ms. Nagel.
Nagel, I appreciate the very detailed explanation because we've been through a few versions of this, so it really clears up a lot of things. I just wanted to point out, just to ask, to be clear, for the sake of board discussion here, can you point out building B and C? Just so we know, because those are the ones with the fourth floor additions, and I just want to make sure we're looking at it right.
Which one is which?
Right.
We'll have to go back to our... You have that initial application up, Caitlin?
I believe B would be the addition, the original contributing building, and then
so
C.
B would be the contributing building is in the middle, and then the non-contributing is on the end here.
C is the one in the that is in the lane, so the addition to the one that faces the lane. So the penthouse addition.
C is a little bit. I'm sorry. Let's go back to, we had a site plan on the, oh, there it is. It's okay.
Oh, there it
so
is.
So starting on Habersham, it would be A, B, and C.
Okay. So the penthouse addition is in the back of C?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm trying to make that a little clearer for you. It's just going to
get
a little pixelated. All right, thank you.
Are there additional questions for the petitioner?
Helms. So effectively, in terms of the number of stories and all, there's really no change in B and C from what was presented in June. You
from
cut
the
height, but you haven't
correct.
Cut the number of stories
yes.
or the square footage or the visual impact of how big the building is, really. It's a little shorter, but it's the same
by
multiple stories.
By reducing the height, that does affect the impact of the overall scale of it. But yes, we are still proposing. So the original application that was approved was a two-story addition to the contributing building and a two-story addition to the non-contributing building. And now we're proposing three stories for both of those additions.
Right. So we can remove A because that's been approved twice. But so we're really looking at now, are these separated for purposes of this? Are we only basically voting on B and C? Are we somehow voting on A as well? Or is this some sort of a combined package?
It's a little confusing, but since A has already been approved, we're really just looking at the changes to B and C today.
And was B and C approved technically back in whatever, 2024?
For the two-story addition, correct.
So if we denied this, you could go back to that?
Technically, yes.
Are there additional questions, Ms. Woodfield?
Woodfield, yes. the mechanical space on the Habersham building looks very large. Is it necessary to be basically like another story up there?
Yeah, and we are setting that back from the roof line so that it would be not as visible from both Habersham Street, which we'll see it here, and also the lane, which I think I have that lane drawing here. So if you're in the lane, your view corridor is going to get cut off by the parapet line. But yeah, we have, because we're trying to reduce the height and impact of both the additions to the other two buildings, we're putting all of our mechanical equipment on this floor, which would be pretty expensive, or on the roof.
And is it totally enclosed or just two walls per the model?
On the two walls.
And we're talking about air condensers and
ERU units, outside air compressors. Yep.
And then the staircase is, or you've got another way to get up to the roof?
It would be by this stair here. Right in the middle. And that too is set back. So that grayer piece is pitched back away from the building. Yeah, you can see it in the model.
I'll just make the comment that when you look at the model, the Habersham building and these two additions become almost the same plane. The height of those buildings are all the same. Thank you.
Are there additional questions for the petitioner?
Just one. You talk about setbacks. Mm-hmm. How much are you setting back the walls for that mechanical enclosure from the edge of the building?
So if you're looking at this lane building here on screen,
right there.
You've got about a 5-foot setback. So if you can envision you're standing here in the lane and looking up, that corner is going to obscure your view of it. And also along Habersham Street, we have, if I can get back to, and I'll say we have an idea of all of this mechanical equipment. We don't have specific specifications because we do need to get through sort of this process before we move forward. We understand that the mechanical equipment needs to be obscured from view by screening. That's an ordinance requirement. If we need to make adjustments to that in future, we can. But we're kind of being honest about saying we anticipate that it's going to take about this much space and it's about this much coverage to obscure that. And we've tucked it in as much as we can at this point, but it is still all in motion. But it is another probably 8 feet setback on the Habersham Street so that it's obscured from view as well.
Just one observation.
Mm-hmm.
Buildings are not two-dimensional.
Understood.
And they're not really seen two-dimensionally. So, you know, the fact that if you stand on the thing, you might not be able to see it doesn't mean that you could probably find someplace within the public right away, not very far away, where that would suddenly become quite apparent. Buildings are three-dimensional entities.
Are there additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you, Mr. Phelps.
Thank you.
I do have a speaker card, Mr. Jones.
Good afternoon, Andrew Jones. I have a question, and it may have been addressed in a prior hearing, but I think this is large-scale development. On a lane that borders a DN area, and I believe there's a rule that the building has to step down to two stories at 20 feet from the lane if it borders DN. That's my recollection, but I'm not sure that that's correct, and I'm just curious as to what how that applies here, if it does at all. Thank you.
Caitlin speaking. Good question, but this actually did not meet the criteria. It was under the square footage for large-scale development, and that was established in the previous approval.
Thank you, Caitlin.
I also, just while I have you, I wanted to also mention for my presentation, there was a public letter in support from HSF.
Thank you. Would the applicant like to respond to public comment?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Can I follow up just a second? So when you're looking at this and you're saying it's not large scale development, you're looking at the three buildings together. Is that correct?
Yes.
So you're considering this all one building?
This is, it's one project. It does have three addresses. This was just how the established one was, but there, yeah, for what the ordinance says about large scale development, this did not fall under that, even with all of it together.
Was that the submission in June of last year, or is that either of the proposed since then?
It would be either, but yes, from 2024, yes, and it still would be the case.
Even with the addition of additional stories?
Yes. So here's this came in the presentation. This checks out the ground floor footprints are less than 9,000 square feet on a single parcel. The buildings are less than five stories in a DC district, and the building is within National Historic Landmark District. Its footprint does not exceed 13,500 square feet.
Woodfield, again, but if we put the three sites together, the footprint would be over 13.5, wouldn't it?
I don't believe so. Okay, they're separate parcels.
Well, they're separate parcels, but they're connected.
So
I think the clarification would be that if the buildings are being evaluated individually based on their tax IDs as separate buildings or collectively. And if we separated out one of the buildings, then it would probably suggest that they are being reviewed separately.
I mean, this is just, we're just going off of what had been previously approved and accepted before. And this is, you know, the footprint hasn't changed.
Sorry. So technically a 15-story building would have the same footprint as a 5-story building?
Yes. But that's not what we're looking at here.
No, I know, but I mean, you know, we are looking at 4 versus 3.
I mean, look, the 4 stories are allowed in the height map. So that's what we were looking at.
Woodfield, again, this is a little troubling that you're talking about three separate parcels when it's actually in these floor plans in use. They're all connected into one parcel, one building. How can that be?
Can I please include the petitioner in this?
Just restate your name for the record,
Patrick,
please.
Phillips, Hanson Architects. So the property is actually two parcels. The previous dry cleaner is one parcel, and then the two buildings adjacent to it are on another parcel. The ordinance does allow for one project to be on multiple parcels as long as it's separated by what IBC defines as separate buildings. So we'll work through the building department to ensure that, but we've created it so that we can separate each of these buildings into separate IBC regulated buildings. The ordinance for a large scale building is a combination of, or an either or of, was it 9,000 square feet per parcel, which both of these projects are less than. And I'll sort of add to that. One of those parcels has two existing buildings on it, and we're adding less than half of the footprint for those additions. we're maintaining those two existing buildings. And then the other component of that is five stories, which the entire project is less than five stories. So overall, we're not a large scale building. And we are allowed to develop multiple quote unquote IBC defined buildings as long as we create that building separation line between them.
Thank you for that clarification. Are there additional questions for staff before we move into board discussion? Thank you, Caitlin. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be heard. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
And then my only contributing suggestion to this would be the fourth floor. There's the two additions. I understand that you've reduced the floor heights and that you've made up for that, added the fourth floor on B and C with reduced floor heights. So we're not looking at a gigantic difference of height. I do see that the setback on the contributing building is only 3 feet. And that being the one that sort of hovers the most onto Bay, that it would have been great to see that setback be a little larger, as you've done with the addition of the penthouse in the back, where you've set it back a good amount, six, eight, which is great. It allows for that light in the lane, which is very appreciated. To those of us who live downtown, lane light matters. But I do understand Bay Street's nature of more commercial and more industrial buildings and what this used to be originally. So I don't think it's a deal breaker in terms of just having a 3 foot setback because it is Bay Street and there isn't anything on the other side. We still have that sunlight. So I think that would be my only comment. But other than that, that's all I got.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Ms. Hamer.
I just want to thank the applicant for putting together this package and clearly distinguishing between the previous submission and what's being proposed now. That was very helpful. Chiming on to what Ms. Nagel said, I do agree. I feel like with her comments about Building B, I feel like in this latest iteration, the expression of Building C's facade is much more appropriate in that scale for the alley. However, it appears that the way the fourth floor has been added to Building B at the alley, I would like to see that be more set back to help with a more appropriate scale at the alley, reading as like three stories or as a two-story addition onto the existing building instead of a three-story addition with a relatively tall top story at that rear elevation. And then my only other qualm, which is that the addition at Building B, technically, additions to contributing resources shall not be visible from the front elevation, but it appears that when the original, at the original submission that it was approved that it would be slightly visible. So it doesn't seem like maybe an extra 2 feet of visibility in this latest iteration from all on the other side of Bay Street. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Ms. Woodfield?
I'm fundamentally unhappy that there's a four-story building being put on the lane and right next to a residential district. I think, you know, there's ways to pick it apart, but you made a big improvement in this submission. I appreciate that it's lower. Again, I'm still not liking the four story. I'm not liking the fact that this back addition just slides right into the corner building. But I think that this is probably an acceptable solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Rowan.
I think it's a beautiful project. And I just want to commend you on your creativity in incorporating the existing buildings that are there in the project. And I agree with staff's decision.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Mr. Helms?
My problem with, like others, is that this is a four-story building. The bigger problem, I believe, is still B, which still reads as very much of a larger building than the things around it. If it had setbacks that were similar to the setbacks in C, it would probably be less offensive. But the real issue is, you know, we're putting, even though we're basically one block away from Bay Street, we're putting larger stuff on the lanes, and that's an issue.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. I'll go around one more time. Ms. Nagel, back over to you.
No further comment.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Ms. Hamer?
No further comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
No further comment.
Ms. Rowan?
No additional comments.
Mr. Helms?
I would actually commend you on your creativity in trying to come up with a way of having four stories without, you know, completely ignoring the visual compatibility.
At this time, I will open the floor for a motion.
Nagel.
Floor is yours.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition number 25-003535-COA for 401-409 East Bay Street, as the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. The motion on the floor is to approve the petition as requested because the work meets the visual compatibility standards. Do I have a second?
Rowan, second.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Thank you. The ayes have it. That petition is approved. Sorry. Next item up on the regular agenda is item number 19, petition of Rose Architects, file number 25-003528 for 118 West Harris Street in addition.
Afternoon. This is Kelly Mitchell. So again, the applicant is requesting approval of a rear addition at 118 West Harris Street. The structure currently has a two-story rear addition, back to the home. The exact day of construction for this addition is unknown at this time. The cadastral survey shows an addition that is narrower than the current home in the late 1930s. The 1953 Sanborn map does not show an addition at the rear of the home, but the 1955 map does show a full width addition. It's unclear if the addition shown on the cadastral survey is the same as the one shown on the 1955 Sanborn, and that may be the 53 Sanborn, which is an error with that, or if these are two separate additions. Staff does believe that this current addition is not historic, however, as it appears to be of like newer building materials. That's important because this addition will be removed as part of the construction of this addition. And given that staff does not believe it's historic, staff finds that this removal meets the standards. The applicant is proposing a two-story hallway that will be narrower in width than the main structure, and that will be below the eave of the house. Staff did confirm prior to this meeting that this hallway is enclosed according to the plans. This hallway will pull the main massing of the addition off the primary structure and will help to minimize the impact of the addition on the main home. As a note, the applicant does intend to restore the back of the main structure, which is currently being obscured by the addition and which will be exposed when it is removed. After multiple site visits, staff does not believe that the rear portion of the home, at least the first and second stories, will be visible from the street, but if it is, the applicant will need to provide additional information such as window opening patterns and materials. The applicant is also proposing some alterations to this third story portion, which is currently visible from the public right away. So same kind of deal, if this is visible once addition goes up, we will need to review opening patterns and materials. There are notes on the plans about work to the existing masonry walls. As already mentioned, work will take place in the rear facade of the building, but the note does not indicate if the work just applies to the rear portion of the building or to the sides in front of the building. If work is taking place on the primary structure besides that rear wall, staff will need to be notified of the proposed work. Staff finds that elements such as porches, opening patterns, and similar design details meet the standards and are visually compatible. There are two details that staff requests that the applicant provide. The applicant should provide the proposed colors for the windows, handrails, lighting, and awning. The applicant should also provide a material sample of the nickel gap siding. This appears to be a fly ash composite material. Composite materials are not explicitly prohibited or approved per the ordinance, and the board has the ability to provide or to approve alternate materials. And to kind of throw a wrench into this entire project, development services just notified me that this does exceed lot coverage. It's about 80.19% according to their calculations. So if that is correct, the applicant will need a variance from the standards for this project if it is approved. So with that, staff does approve recommend approval of the rear addition with the conditions that you see on the screen, as well as an additional condition to get a variance for the lot coverage, assuming that development services calculations are correct. So with that, does the commission have any questions?
Kelly, can you just clarify what the zoning administrator or development services said about lot coverage? Where did we think we were based on the submission, and where is he determining that we are?
So based on the information that I provided, it was at the 74.5 or just under 75, which is what is allowed per the zoning ordinance. I asked for some clarity from the zoning administrator, and it sounds like he's counting all roofed elements as well as that. It was also the rear deck with parking underneath. I believe that counts as well. So based on everything that he sees on the drawings, that's where the 80.19% is coming from. And they can also verify with the applicant when they did up how they got their numbers.
Okay, thank you. Are there additional questions for staff?
Can I just, because I think this is really the crux of the matter. There is a porch over a space. Are they calling that open space?
Yeah, so based on what development services told us, it sounds like this element may count towards the overall lot coverage. I know it has for one or two projects in the past, but I'm not sure how the applicant factored that in or not, or how they got their number.
Okay, and then the deck over the parking spot?
Yeah, that's, I think, is what's counting, what may be triggering this. I don't know exactly everything that development services counted, but I do trust their numbers.
And the final number is what?
He told me 80.19%.
80.
Yeah, 80.
0.19.
And the math is 75%.
Are there additional questions for Kelly?
And the applicant is here as well.
Okay, thank you. Would the applicant please come forward and state your name for the record?
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. Kevin Rose of Rose Architects. Thanks for letting me speak today. It's good to see some new faces. Hopefully Tom Thompson's doing well in Ireland, and he'll be back on the board soon. I guess I want to do a little introduction since some of you may not know me. I've been practicing here since 1986, and that started when I was a docent at the Davenport House, volunteer, and I've been at it a while. I'm familiar with the ordinance. I'm also familiar with the ordinance as lot coverage and the way it has been interpreted in the past. And this is the way it should be, is that it says in the ordinance that roofed elements count as lot coverage, but decks and porches and things that are not roofs do not count. So this deck slash porch, whatever, on the back is not covered. It is letting water through. It's not a roof. So just want to be clear about that, and we can talk with zoning about that at another time. But I just wanted to clear that up because that is something that we did. We did a lot of nipping, tucking, pushing, pulling on this to make it work. Another thing I want to mention is the clients, the owners, Ted and Felicia, they're going to make this their, you know, forever home. So they want to get it right. And they're taking the apartments out and they're reworking this into a single family home, which I think is important because this is for them to retire in. And this is part of the reason that there's an elevator involved because they want to make sure they have access to the house in later years. To talk a little bit about what we're going to do with the regular house, because the historic house, we're going to do a full tax credit, National Park Service, restoration of it in kind. The connectors piece, the stair tower that we have, it's two stories. The reason it's on that side is that corner of the building has been messed up the most. And I believe the addition that's there now, that kind of plug that plugs that visual continuity of all the courtyards, that that corner is the worst one of the bunch. So we selected that as our area just to walk you through kind of some of our thoughts at the beginning of this. That will reveal roughly 2/3 or more of the historic rear elevation, which will also be restored, you know, with Secretary of Interior standards. And we'll cross that bridge. We were hired to do the addition. And so we'll be working with Ethos Preservation to work on the main house. There has been an application, I believe, for the front to restore the front in kind and add some other, but that's not through our office. So I can't speak to that. We like to talk about reversibility when we do additions, right? So pulling this addition off, which is basically a kitchen and, you know, like you would in the olden days, they would put them on the back of the house and they would usually burn off at some point. But the owners felt it was important to create that courtyard. They were inspired by a lot of other projects that have been approved here in Savannah recently and in not so recent years. It was important to reveal a lot more of the existing house rather than have these tiny little, because the 80s addition or 90s addition that's there really kind of messed up that back wall. So they wanted to reveal more of the house. And so that was part of our plan. I'd like to say that I agree with the staff report. We basically, you know, they're understaffed right now. I guess Jonathan left and they've been busting their, you know, what's, to try to go through every single one of these, all these standards. And, you know, hats off to them. There's at least 60 standards on every project that they have to go through. And we felt pretty good about this after meeting with them and noticing the report said that we met all the standards. And I want to talk a little bit about nuance, maybe not now, maybe later, but nuance is really what we're talking about here. And this is an addition and the code, you know, ordinance says that it should be subservient to, you know, the main house. It doesn't meet carriage house guidelines. And what we try to do with our design was to bring the connecting piece, the stair, where the stair and the hallway is, down to two levels there. So it wasn't, so it appeared as it was removed. The higher mass was at the back. And we didn't want to put the elevator on the main house because that's a lot harder to reverse. And it also interacted with the original fenestration of the historic structure. So there was a lot of thought that went into this. There was, we were obviously walking the line on lot coverage, but by our calculations, we are under that. And I believe that if you read the ordinance out loud, you would agree with me because there's no roof over that parking. And to kind of move on a little bit to the few conditions, which I'd like to call clarifications. The nickel gap siding that we proposed is just a nicer grade of Hardy. Hardy has narrow profiles. It's a little rough. It looks a little rough. This product is basically a nicer version with better shadow lines. than Hardy. It's something that's used on a lot of more upscale homes. So once we get the sample from the company, which didn't want to rush it to us, I'm sure that staff will be happy with that, and it's definitely going to look better. Colors, and we're waiting to try to match the front of the house with our window colors because we want this to be consistent, and we're still coordinating the front of the house with the back, and we have iron ore on a lot of this, and that's probably what we're going to go with. We just want to make sure that we're consistent with our window colors throughout, from the addition to the historic home. So I'll kind of leave it at that. If there's any questions from the board.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Are there questions for the petitioner? Ms. Nagel.
Nagel, I did have a question that came up pre-meeting, and just to get clarification on connecting piece, I'll call it, with the two. So it's not an ADU because it's connected to the main structure. Is that a covered structure or an uncovered structure that connects the two?
The two floors, the first two floors are all enclosed, all covered, it's all conditioned. It's basically the stair for the back of the building. There's a few messed up stairs in the historic home that we're taking out and we're going to restore back to normal, and this gives them access at the back and also allows them to get to the back of the property.
It's a covered stairway structure. Is there a good, what's your best image of that, that we can sort of understand it?
The best image from...
Okay, thank you.
So you can see here, these trees are actually a lot taller and larger than what they appear to be. But this is where we're at, two stories here. And then there's a little portion of wall that we had to add at the end because we're doing our, like a carriage house, the second level at the back is lower than the main house because it needs to be subservient. So we're mitigating that with a ramp up to the back of the historic home there on that second level.
One other question. Have you talked to or heard from, or is there any public input from that neighbor or that side that you just showed of that entire connector situation? How does that, you know, hover over them? And have they voiced any concerns over that?
I don't believe anyone lives there. The neighbors, our clients tried to reach out and we never heard anything back. So if there is somebody here, I'd love to hear from them. I just, you know, it's, you can only do so much.
It's, I just asked because of obviously it does tower over their courtyard, I'm assuming. I don't know what goes on near there, but it's a big, you know, blocker of sunlight. Thank you.
Yeah. There are additional questions? Ms.
Woodfield, yes. So you have some mechanical equipment on the roof. Is that air conditioner condensers?
What? We're hoping to get some of that in the courtyard and some of that in the space that is right here, this atrium that we're creating. We're pulling that away from the property line to get glass in. We're not inventing the firewall here. I mean, I wish I did. I wish I could go back in time so that Chicago and Boston wouldn't have suffered as much. But we are kind of at a zero lot line city, and that's something that we have to adhere to. But this atrium allows us to break up that facade some, give some fenestration to it. We had tried to do some fenestration on the stair tower on that side. The planning department doesn't always approve fire glass. It's very cost prohibitive, but they don't always like it because they're going to say, well, what if someone builds there, right? So this is, we've left it out for now. And so does that answer your question?
Yes. And could you scroll down and show us the second floor? I think you've got a terrace that goes all the way. Okay, so this is the second floor. And then the third floor?
This is open space right here, courtyard. This space right here is not undercover. It has it has a grating of a deck so it water and light can come down through there. I think staff said that it's not visible from a public right away. So, and then we have obviously right here, this is a deck and it's not covered. And then this is open right here. We could probably get rid of the awning back here and help things a little bit, but, it just seemed to look right back there. And that's, you know, sometimes the architects make decisions like that. Third floor.
So this is all deck on the left, terraces, terrace one.
This is terrace right here. And this is kind of the connector part of the terrace with the ramp going up and then the attenuated height here. And once again, the atrium. This elevator gives access to the upper floor of the house as well.
Thank you.
Additional questions for the petitioner?
Robert Helms. I have a couple comments. One, I don't really understand the purpose of the courtyard since the courtyard appears to be surrounded by three stories on all sides. It's going to make it a very dark. You won't be able to grow any plants there. The other comment I would make is that your deck, the back of the building, is the kind of thing that at least in London would be absolutely killed because it allows the inhabitants to look out over and into other people's yards and property. So whether you call it an orangerie with a flat deck or a conservatory with a pitch deck, they wouldn't permit it. Anything that you can actually walk out on would not be permitted. And this, therefore, to me, is effectively covered.
Which the deck on the back?
We're talking about the thing over the parking space.
Yes, yes.
So, at least in the UK, it would be absolutely verboten. Well, anyway.
Oh, we're in Savannah, and if I ever operate in the UK, I'll definitely take that part.
There are additional questions for the petitioner?
Woodfield, I have one more. Part of what makes this not massing, not very compatible with the lane and the idea of these small lane buildings that are, you know, subservient, complementary to the main residence is the elevator. You know, so instead of having more of a simple mass with a simple roof, you know, you have this projection with the elevator, and this has caused us troubles many times. So have you considered just pulling the elevator into the mass of the building and not making it an expression all in its own?
Yes, and it's part of the push and pull game that we've been dealing with as far as the lot coverage. So I firmly believe that we shouldn't be asking for variances for that. I strongly believe that that's, you know, contributing to all kinds of stormwater issues and other things in our town. So I feel like if we can keep that working and, you know, a three-story elevator on a lane is, it's not an easy fix, right? And I appreciate what you're saying because we've gone round and round on where to put this and it just kept ending up there and it ended up on the other side. And then we realized that the eastern portion of the historic building was the rough shape and we were going to try to keep the western portion in center. We tried to use the lowest elevator, no overrun that we could. We tried to do everything we could in that regard. And we made a little bit of an ode to the roof line of the historic home by kind of placing that as a separate element. We did have single masses and it started to look a little too modern, which those of you that know me would probably laugh at that statement, but we were trying to make this a sensitive and a little playful where that's kind of like an artist studio and there's not this rigidity to the mass. And we were able to lower the side mass by doing that, which I think is helpful as well.
Any additional questions?
Helen, one comment. I would be much happier with this design if the elevator were parked next to the main building, either in the courtyard or otherwise, because then it doesn't impinge on the lane, and it's the same height, roughly, as the main building.
Makes sense.
Sticking up as it does where it is, I'm not sure it's visually compatible.
Right. Any additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you, Mr. Rose.
We do have development services here trying to figure out this lot cover situation, and this is going to be a question, I think, for the applicant on whether or not this parking area that's under the deck, if it's open from above or if there's like actual like wall material under the deck, if that makes sense.
Kevin Rose, once again. So the way we've designed this parking area, it is enclosed by a fence towards the lane. So it is not a garage. It's under a deck. It's semantics, but if you look at this elevation right here, you can see where there's a gap here where this fence that encloses the refuse, it's just a fence, and so this is actually open, and if that fence weren't there, we'd be looking at a car. So this is what we felt was the cleanest solution. You know, this is visible across a parking lot, which I've seen as a parking lot since I moved here in 86, and I wish they'd put a building there. But it's going to be a parking lot for a long time.
Does that answer the question from the building development services lot coverage determination?
Hey there, Edward Morrow, Director of Development Services here at the MPC. Mr. Rose, if you could just specify for the portions that are definitely under a roof, what is the total square footage as opposed to the square footage of the property in total, and does that exceed 75%?
Under roof, it's under 75. If you count the deck as roof, then it's over 75.
Okay, so your existing dwelling is 900 and some odd square feet. Your addition is about 600. And so those two bring us close to 75, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
So we're not talking about the deck. We're just talking about the portions that are underneath a ceiling or roof.
Yes.
And so do you have any idea what that actual square footage is?
Off the top of my head, I wish I could memorize all that stuff.
Okay. I would just say that once we actually had the opportunity to get those square footages, the HDBR does have the authority to approve that variance should it be required. It would just need to be advertised.
Yes. I believe this is our existing building, 939, new addition, 557, and then 1496, I believe. And then our 2,000 square foot, roughly, gross square feet for the lot. So our calculation says 74.8, and that was using Revit and tracing the lines and everything. So.
So just for clarification, Kelly, based on that information, the lot coverage is 74.8.
So it sounds accurate. You can always put a condition on just being
to verify.
Yeah, confirm, just in case.
Okay, thank you. We do have two members of the public that wish to speak. First up is Anna Wright. And just as a reminder, state your name for the record and keep your comments to 3 minutes or less.
Anna Habersham Wright. I'm also an architect. This is a very bizarre proposal. They are restoring the original house, but not as it was. Any house in Savannah would have had a porch on the back, probably a kitchen, bathrooms, et cetera, along the back. So, in fact, they're stripping the original house down to something it never was. And then they have this extremely tenuous pseudo addition, which is hardly an addition. It's Anyway, it's just a little string of stuff. And then they claim that the addition is lower than the house, and yet they have a elevator shaft that is as high as the house. They have totally abused the neighbors, way beyond anything within the social contract of those of us who live in Savannah. And as far as the lane is concerned, it's treated with absolute contempt. Critical component of the Oglethorpe Plan and our National Historic Landmark District includes the lanes and the continuity of the walls along the lane. And this is perforated everywhere with silly little chairs and decks and et cetera. And it's really quite a shocking proposal. And even if the next door neighbor is not alert enough to object, it would set a terrible precedent across the city. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. We have Mr. Jones.
Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. Just let me turn to these illustrations. We oppose this proposal. This proposal has negative implications for Savannah's National Historic Landmark status. Just for information, the last status that the NHL had was threatened. The next category is emergency, and after that, the loss of status. Currently, all NHLs are in non-status category, while the requirements are under review, and Savannah was never upgraded. This addition extends the front structure to the lane. And this proposal will result, as we've seen, in the entire eastern lot line having a 2 to 3 story structure. In 2018, when the NPS downgraded Savannah, it issued a detailed report of the overriding threats. And it stated among the first threats that much of the growth that has occurred in the district has been in the open space between buildings and the corresponding lanes. Often the only undeveloped area on many lots, this has led many to build additions in these spaces for additional living space. The greatest culprit, these are their words, the greatest culprit has been those additions which connect street-facing residences with their associated carriage houses. This interrupts the house, courtyard, carriage house rhythm and east-west sight lines of continuous courtyards visible from the north-south collector streets. And the report had some examples. The top one, you are familiar with that. It's mislabeled that 201 West Jones. And, of course, that's been somewhat destroyed by the new addition that was approved. So we've destroyed the first example that the NPS gave us as something worthy of protecting. Their second example is of what not to do. And you can see this is actually built as a single property, I've been told. It's not a connection of a carriage house to a front house. This is all one construction from the street all the way through to the lane, giving basically having the same effect that this proposal will have. So we are in warning that this is something not to do. There are two illustrations. We violated one, and it looks like we're about to violate the second. You should also note that this building here, it's very visible not just from the lane or the north-south streets, but also from Liberty Street. The accessory buildings fronting the lane are typically 2 stories and approximately 20 feet high. This proposal gives the impression of a lane building that is not compatible in height to its neighboring buildings. The groupings of windows into horizontal bands has no relationship to the vertical proportion of window openings of nearby contributing structures, and window openings are part of the visual compatibility test.
Mr. Jones, if you can wrap up your comments.
I'm almost done. The chaotic rhythm of solids and voids resulting from a chaotic massing, box-like forms, bears no relationship with the restraint of the forms of nearby contributing buildings.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Did we have anyone virtually that expressed interest in public comment?
No, ma'am.
Thank you. You'll need to fill out a speaker card.
Oh, I'm sorry. I filled it out. I didn't get it on the sign sheet.
Oh, sorry. If you would
I'll recognize you. Just make sure you fill out a speaker card.
I'll be very sure.
Sure.
And I'll fill that out afterwards. My name is Steve Edwards. I represent the Downtown Neighborhood Association. And we also oppose the request for certificate of appropriateness for two primary reasons. The first, it's not visually compatible with the surrounding buildings and structures to which it's visually related. There's no precedent on this lane for a building of this height, mass, or design. Second, the addition of this structure would add to the threat to the designation of the Savannah Downtown National Historic Landmark District by the National Park Service. The National Park Service, as Mr. Jones has noted that our landmark districts being degraded by additions to the open space between buildings and their corresponding lanes for additional living space and the integration of neighbor elevators. And that precisely matches what's proposed here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment? Just state your name for the record again, please.
I'm still Kevin Rose. So one of my favorite Lenny Bruce quotes is when people ask him, Lenny, judge keeps throwing you in jail. React. What do you think? And he says, judge isn't throwing me in jail for my act. He's throwing me in jail for the policeman's version of my act. I want to back up a little bit and introduce myself to Andrew. The National Park Service did issue that report, and it was done in the office I was working at the time. I was basically side by side with the person writing it. And part of the nuance of what is going on here, and he showed the exact reason that we discussed this, is this was all about the north-south streets and their view at the end. This was all about maintaining that edge. The other part of the nuance is that then goes on and talks about the bathroom tile buildings and the other building over here on Oglethorpe that, you know, it's the city services, county services in it now. So, yes, there's plenty of these things that have happened in Savannah that are bad. What we're trying to do here is mid-block, and we're actually pulling that addition away from the closest western block. You really have to stand on a ladder to see it from that angle, and really pay attention because it is blocked off there. So I guess I just want to just reiterate that, you know, the staff talked about how standards are met. And we can use all the hyperbole and chicken littleism and everything else that we want about the National Park Service recommendations. This is a small project. This is a small part. The Oglethorpe plan can take, even in its rigidity, can take a lot of different types of projects and growth and still maintain its character. These large-scale projects that, you know, we all should be really paying attention to are the ones that are doing the job. And I worked elbow to elbow with the person writing this, and our conversations were always about what is the biggest threat. And it was hotels and other things that were going on in the district. It's put out there. You know, the policeman's story is that this is the big deal. The big deal is the rest of the document, which I've proofread several times and reacquainted myself with, you know, several years later now. So, you know, if we light our torches with kind of half the information, we have to be careful, right? And that's all I'm asking.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. At this time, we will enter into board discussion, and no further public comment will be heard. Mr. Helms, I'll start with you.
No further comment.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. Ms. Rowan?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
Thank you. I'm very concerned about the project for a number of reasons. I don't find it compatible with the historic context of the lane or of the contributing building that it's connecting to, you know, massing scale,
Again, the wall along the lane of the buildings and then the open space in the middle. I think the open space is very convoluted. The lot coverage is, you know, there is not much open space. There's not much light. It is pretty aggressive to the neighbors to have that much construction solid along that wall. Again, the compatibility of massing scale is my biggest problem.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Hamer?
I'd like to add to what Mrs. Woodfield was saying. I feel that this addition is reading as an accessory building, and we need to kind of treat it with the same standards that are applied to accessory buildings since it is reaching the lane, which allows only two stories. And typologically, it needs to be similar to other carriage houses on the lanes or other additions on the lanes, which are not read as or as read as a singular volume with a flush facade meeting the lane. And while I do appreciate the desire for playful architecture and design, I feel like that could be explored on the interior of the courtyard space where it's not visible from the right of way.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Ms. Nagel?
Two main concerns with this. The first being, yes, the elimination of the void. And I do understand that in comparison to 201 West Jones Street, this is not on a corner. However, because there is such a large void to the left of it, if you're looking from the lane, you can actually see this all the way from Liberty Street. So it is very, very visible, even though it's not on a corner. The solid wall breaking that carriage house, main house rhythm is a big deal. I think, you know, whether or not you heard from the neighbors, maybe they're not there, maybe they're away, it still will forever break that beautiful sort of rhythm that exists in Savannah, which I think we should definitely protect. There are many houses that are connected to their carriage house, but there's other ways of doing it that aren't solid, massive walls of concrete or stucco. There are green walls. There are trellises. There's visual things that can create privacy without having to create a massive wall, which I think one of the people in the public comment did a good job at presenting that one visual where we have that really tall wall, and it's a shame because it does not look pretty. It doesn't look historic. It doesn't protect our plan, our Oglethorpe plan. So I do have a problem with that wall. Even though it's not on a corner, you can still see it. It's very, very, very visible from the lane and from Liberty Street. The other issue is, yes, the height of that structure on the lane. It's just in comparison to the main house, it's just out of proportion and inappropriate for a lane. In my opinion, it is not compatible with the height of other structures on a lane. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Mr. Helms, I'll go back around to you.
No further comment.
Ms. Rowan.
I mean, I think it's important to remember that this is an addition, and I know the two homes that are to the right of me, they have enclosed courtyards. So, I mean, it exists in Savannah. So those are the two comments that I have.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan. Ms. Woodfield?
I think we've talked about the big issues. I'll just say two more. One is I don't think the lane is intended to have individual entrances the way this is set up. So there is a canopy, there's a door. You know, it looks more like it's a separate house than, you know, part of the lane and part of the fabric of the lane. And to put a covered deck on a lane, I mean, our lanes are not very tidy, and it feels like it's it is not going to be a used space, and it's inappropriate to have to introduce this very leisurely idea of public of space onto the lane is contrary to the nature of what the lane is about. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Hamer?
No further comment.
Thank you, Ms. Hamer. Ms. Nagel?
I'll add to what Ms. Woodfield said, because to be fair, I live in a house that has a deck on top of a carport, and I did not do the project. I bought the house like that. I see where there's an advantage to it. You've got the setback, so you're not hovering on top of the lane. I'm not opposed to that. It's not covered, so you can throw that carriage house all the way to the lot line and have a massive block, or you can have this, which I would definitely vote for this. But I still have a problem with the connecting mass being so massive and obstructive to our plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. I will open the floor for a motion. I believe the board can consider a continuance, certainly. I'm not sure if we're already reviewing it, Melanie, if the applicant can pull it.
If you as a board would like to encourage him to continue it to address some of the comments that you've made,
sure.
Then you can make a recommendation or you can accept it. You know,
sure.
That he continue it to the next meeting. Just make sure it's a date certain.
Nagel?
Sure.
Sorry. Nagel, sorry.
You want me to do it?
I think we need to
hear
from Karen first.
I just wanted to close out the comments that, you know, the applicant is asking for a continuance. So that is something that the board should consider, and if we do consider, I would say adding some conditions so that the applicant has some direction before coming back before this board. And I will open the floor for a motion.
Helms. Nagel. Go ahead. You got this.
Mr. Helms, the floor is yours.
Okay. I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review deny the permission of Rose Architects, COA 25-0035281 West Harris Street, based on the incompatibility of the project with the visual compatibility factors and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
There's a motion on the floor to deny based on visual incompatibility. Is there a second?
Woodfield, a second.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Mr. Helms, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Nay.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Sorry, can you clarify the difference between the denial and continuance?
So a denial would kick them back through the whole process from the beginning, and a continuance would allow them to make adjustments and come back at the next meeting.
Okay. Hamer, nay.
Nagel?
Nay.
That motion fails. I will open the floor for a new motion.
Nagel.
Ms. Nagel, the floor is yours.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review continue the petition number 25-003528-COA, provided that the following conditions be met. The revision of the wall.
Ms. Nagel, just do you wish to clarify to say conditions met or allow the applicant to address?
To allow the applicant to revise the design of the wall. God, what was the other? And the height of the overall height of the carriage house, or it's not an addition, so it's a
the addition.
It's an addition. Okay. So I'll start over. Nagel. I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review continue the petition number 25-003528-COA for 118 West Harris Street to
If you want to simplify
that, the applicant review.
You can even say the conditions.
The wall and the height of the overall height of the addition to meet the visual compatibility of the design standards.
Okay, the motion. Sorry, Melanie.
I was just going to try to make your life a little bit easier.
Thanks. I need it.
And basically just so that you're not getting yourself kind of caught up, because he could come in and lower something and then you could say no. And then we're going around this circle. It's just cleaner to say that you're allowing him to continue, in order to address concerns expressed today.
Correct.
Include height and
I was following, the chair's suggestion of providing some guidance so that we're not hearing this all over again with no guidance.
Yes, and that would allow guidance. So you're allowing him to address the board's concerns regarding height, and I'm just going to throw something over to massing or the other things, and then it is up to him to come back with an alternative design to address some of the concerns expressed today at the meeting.
That sounds simple.
Yeah, sure.
I'll start over then. Nagel, I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review continue the petition number 25-0035-28 for 118 West Harris Street to allow the petitioner to review and revise as discussed with the suggestion set forth of the revisions of the wall and the overall height of the addition.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. The motion on the floor is to continue the application to allow the applicant to address concerns discussed, including the wall and the overall height of the addition. Do I have a second?
Second.
Ms. Woodfield with a second. Mr. Helms, how do you vote?
I prefer Melanie's motion. I'll vote aye.
So that was an aye. Thank you. Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
All right. The ayes have it. That petition is continued to the next meeting. Thank you for your patience as we work through that. Just a reminder to members of the public, we are humans and making decisions in real time. Next item up on the agenda is the petition of J. Elder Studio, file number 25-00275 for 219 East York Street, new construction accessory buildings, part one and two, and variance recommendation requests.
Good afternoon. This is Kelly again. So again, the applicant is proposing the construction of accessory dwelling unit, as well as a variance recommendation request for the lot coverage of 219 East York Street. The proposed lot coverage is 79% instead of the 75% allowed under the standards. The proposed accessory structure is two stories tall. As a note, the ordinance explicitly states that mezzanines do not count as a floor, which is why this is considered two stories and not above that. The applicant should confirm the overall height of the ADU. The plans do indicate a max height of 25 feet, but if you calculate the dimensions, it puts the ADU at 25.3 inches, just a hair over. So we just want to make sure that the ADU is a match of 25 feet. While reviewing the project, staff found that the overall design is a more modern interpretation of historic elements seen in both the primary building and in the surrounding context. The vertical nature of the siding, windows, and similar elements reflect those vertical elements seen in the immediate area. Also, the roof is kind of a more modern interpretation of a flat roof. Staff finds that the majority of the overall design and individual elements meet the standards and are visually compatible, but there are a couple of items that need to be addressed. The first is the stain of the wood. A sample is seen on the table. I'll pass around in a minute. That stain is not commonly seen as part of a primary building material. It's seen more with decking and fences. So staff would recommend that a paint be used instead of the stain. The applicant should also adjust how far down side elevation that this roof materials goes. As currently designed, this side element reads more as siding and not roof material. So staff request they pull it up just a hair. The applicant will also need to address the roof form itself. While preparing for this meeting, staff realized that there's a minor contradiction in the staff report and in the ordinance. The ordinance with the roof section requires that accessory buildings have a minimum eave depth of 8 inches. The interior, the house face and elevation and lane face and elevation has the 8 inches, but the side elevations do not. The ordinance for the accessory buildings, however, requires that a shed roof has to be hidden by a parapet, kind of removing that necessity for an eave. So with that said, the applicant will either need to adjust design of the roof form to meet the standards to either be behind a parapet or change its design to be more of a normal pitched roof with the 8-inch eaves. The applicant also will need to apply for a special exception if they request to retain the roof as it currently stands. Finally, the applicant is requesting a variance recommendation request for the lot coverage. Per the ordinance, the maximum lot coverage is 75%. The applicant is proposing 79%. Overall, staff found that the variance criteria was met. The lot is narrow in size, and the overall size of the ADU is only 305 square feet, which is on the smaller side for such buildings. Staff also found that the request is not purely financial in nature, and that site conditions were not the result of the applicant's actions. So with that, staff recommends approval of the ADU with the design seen on the screen, the conditions seen on the screen, sorry, as well as approve the variance recommendation request because staff found that standards were met. With that, does the board have any questions?
Thank you, Kelly. Are there questions for staff on this one?
Nagel. Kelly, can you do me a favor? Would you pull up an existing street lane lane view of this lane as it is right now?
Yes, ma'am. Just 1 second.
And my question is going to be, is there anything that's being removed that is currently there to put this up? Or is it a complete vacant situation with nothing being torn down?
Just 1 second. That Google does not like me. Just 1 second.
You get to go lane.
Yeah, 1 second. So I was trying to find the little, this little man that wasn't on the other one.
No.
There we go. Yeah, so it's this property right here. So as of right now, unlike the previous application, there's no connecting element. There's nothing like that. So this ADU is completely separate from this from the primary building.
What is happening to the wall that is covered in that ivy to the right? Is that a historic wall, an original wall? Where is that wall going to go? So that entirely ivy-covered wall, is that the neighbor's or is that this property's? Whose wall is that?
So that will be a question for the applicant. I'm not sure who necessarily owns the wall.
And is the wall in the back of the property a historic wall? So it's the one with the black door, correct?
Yes.
Is that wall an original wall, a historic wall, or is that being torn down?
I believe, and I'm pulling up the plans right now. I believe
Sabrina, that both of the walls are Savannah brick.
Right, but they don't have to be original and historic or contributing. So I do wanted to know.
Staff will have to do more research to determine if that was, you know, if that is historic. We did not look at that. From what I understand, those may be coming down, but the applicant can verify that.
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions for Kelly?
Woodfield, if you look at the site plan, the courtyard.
And Ms. Woodfield, could you just speak closer to your mic or pull it?
Sorry. Since we just had this question about what is considered as open space on a property and what is covered, if we look at the site plan for this, there's a deck and a lot of stairway. Is that area considered open space?
So yeah, from my understanding, stairs like this would not count towards lot coverage. If for whatever reason they decide to put a roof over those stairs to make it covered, that might, but uncovered would not count as lot coverage.
Thank you.
Additional questions for staff? Thank you, Kelly. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, everyone. Jerome Elder with J. Elder Studio. And, well, to start, I'd like to thank staff especially because this project has gone through many, many revisions and discussions. And also I'd like to thank some members of the neighborhood and the community as we've been fortunate to be able to meet with some of them over the past few weeks since doing the submission. And well, to start to address your question, Ms. Nagel, the wall is on our property and that wall is in your construction. So it was, as far as we have determined, it is not historic. With that being said, that wall can also still be integrated into the, it's a masonry wall. We can potentially integrate it. The condition of the wall is not great, but on the property line, the one that's within the property, that one is one that could also be considered. But again, it's non-historic and it will not be visible at all. To address a few different concerns, because as I said, we've had a lot, and you've probably seen the public comment, this project does have a very contemporary, as of a modern contemporary design style. And there are various opinions about contemporary design, especially within historic districts. Based on our understanding and our review with staff, as well as inquiries on the Secretary of Interior standards, we do understand that what we are doing is a design that can be considered appropriate as it is a contrasting design style to the existing historic house. The style is also one that is drawing from various aspects of context. However, with that being said, we also, in the discussions with the community, identified other ways that we can approach it in order to lessen the harshness of that contrast, which seems to be a large part of opposition. And I wanted to just take a moment to share that because we, since we only met with the community, only got to just before I had to leave for family emergency, which was 2 weeks ago. We didn't get the chance to send it to the staff early enough for them to review it formally for this meeting. And with that being said, I'd like for you to consider allowing us to continue it in order to explore it. But just because I do know there may be a lot of public comment and concern across the board, I wanted to share the exploration and revision so that you understand the changes to the design approach. One being that, and this is the approach that I believe you guys could see my screen. What it is that we chose to change the roof from being that shed roof. One of the concerns that was brought across, and we were considerate too because we have internal gutter is what we designed the previous submission to be, as in this one, was that the shed roof was going to shed water onto the neighboring property. In those discussions, we determined that we can explore doing a gable and then also to additionally reduce that the height at the very edge of the lane, we set back that top portion of it. And we reconfigured the mezzanine to now be along, well, no longer on the lane side, but it's on the courtyard side. As you can see, what that does do is reduce that height along the lane. It also is something that exists in many of the carriage houses that you may see where they have a dormer. This is not necessarily a dormer, but it is a loose interpretation of one. The other aspect of this design that we did change is instead of breaking at this point with the material, we just continued the stucco wall up. And also we reduced the scale of the windows in both of these. One other thing I wanted to address is there's a lot of discussion about how the lanes have been used. Savannah has evolved as a city. The overflow plan has evolved. And our historic designation, yes, is based on at the point in time that we received it and continuing what was there as material and fabric. For new additions and any type of changes, a new style is not something that is inappropriate. It is something that is different. And there are many styles throughout the history of Savannah's historic district when it was designated. And as I said, it's evolved. The lanes have evolved from, yes, they still serve a utilitarian purpose, but they've the accessory units, these carriage houses that we have been seeing a lot of being turned into ADUs, they are because of a change in the need of the population and the community. For these projects, I believe we need to also consider that whilst the lanes may be utilitarian, our use of the lane has evolved. It is still there for access. It's still there for utility purposes and waste. But at the same time, with the changes, with an increase in population, with an increase in need for families to have more space to accommodate their needs, that's why the carriage houses have evolved more so from just housing a car to having a dwelling unit above. Many of the historic ones have been altered and adjusted to accommodate accessory dwelling units above. And in this case, there was nothing there. And it is an odd site in that it is very narrow. So thus, the reason why we ended up having to have an increase and ask for a variance is for the depth of a car for the garage, as well as to accommodate having our trash, because the site is so narrow, there's no way to have trash on the outside. If not, you're going to keep having to move your trash before you park, move your trash before you leave. So all of those things are what led to us having to just increase the depth of it, which honestly is only about a foot. And that equated to taking us 5% over the, well, not 5, but 4% above for that variance request. I think, as I said, I'm requesting a continuance, but I wanted to share this as it is something that is different and is considerate to many of the comments that we've heard from the public. And I'm not sure if you have any questions or comments, but I wanted to just share that as well.
Thank you, Mr. Elder. Are there questions for the petitioner?
Helms, I have a question. You made a very eloquent speech about the change in the lanes. What percentage of the change in the use of the lanes is driven by the desire to put STVRs in the lanes?
I do not know, but I can tell you STVRs are, I have been in Savannah for 18 years. I've lived in the downtown district on Charlton Street on actually for a very long time, and right in the heart of it, overlooking the squares. And I also have lived in the Thomas Square district, and I lived and own a house in Baldwin Park. So I can share that I have seen STVRs become something, but when I was here, all of those STVRs, especially for carriage houses, were, and many of them are still used for housing. As a student, I did live in a carriage house for a while, and I know many who still do. This property owner, they plan on using this as their accessory dwelling unit. They are using the main house, the upper portion, as their dwelling. They have a lot of children and grandchildren, and they do have visits from them. And this is part of their desire to have the accessory dwelling unit. So as I said, I don't know, but
you will
appreciate your willingness to answer the question. I just want to remind the board and members of the public with us, that the use in, STVR certificates or the non-existence is outside of our purview and can't be the basis or considered as part of our decision. Are there additional questions for the petitioner?
Nagel.
Ms. Nagel.
Could you explain a little bit about your mezzanine level? How is that your mezzanine, you're saying it's a mezzanine facing the interior of the house? Because in the exterior, obviously, the mezzanine doesn't qualify as a mezzanine. So can you just describe your mezzanine level in terms of its actual height?
So the mezzanine by code and also how the ordinance looks at it, it is a elevated portion of the interior that is open to the main floor area, which this is completely open on both sides to the main floor area. It does not go wall to wall. As I was going to say wall to wall, it's not an enclosed room.
I guess, well, and we can discuss this in board discussion. The problem is we're looking at something that isn't what's proposed. I do appreciate your effort in saying, hey, I've looked at public comment. Maybe we can continue this. Maybe this is what it'll look like. But I think we need to reel it back to what we're actually voting on today. So this image is sort of throwing us off because we can't vote on what we're looking at. There you go.
So the mezzanine in this case is also still set back within. And if I go to the floor plan.
The reason I wanted to go back to what we're looking at today, mm-hmm, and not getting ahead of ourselves in a possible continuance is that top is a whole other floor. Whereas now you've made them dormers, but I think we shouldn't discuss the possible continuance with something we're all just seeing for the first time and go back to the top floor being questionably a third floor, which is why I'm asking about the mezzanine. And again, we can go into this board discussion. I just want to clarify what your mezzanine is and how it fits the parameters of an actual mezzanine versus a floor.
Correct.
A story.
So as I said, even in the current, what is being reviewed, the mezzanine is open on both sides. It's the same thing. Let me just get there. So it is open. Well, there is a railing here and a railing here, and it's open to the main floor space. And that's what constitutes a mezzanine. And that's why it does still count as being a mezzanine.
Which is why you're allowed the two extra floors.
There's no extra floor.
Well, the top part, we're counting it as a third floor.
So let's think of a mezzanine more of a loft that is open to a space.
But it still counts as a floor. So essentially, just for clarification, have a three-floor situation.
No, it does not count as a floor.
Okay.
And I would...
And our ordinance does explicitly say that mezzanines do not count as a floor, which is why this is considered two stories and not three.
And the reason we're counting it as
well.
Okay, understood. And the reason we're counting it as a mezzanine is because it has two openings.
It is open to.
Okay.
It's communicating space is the technical term.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
Okay, thank you.
Quick question, please, Woodfield.
Sure.
So I think part of the concern, I know the staff brought it up, but I'll bring it up as well to point out, is that if you have a height limit of 25 feet and you have the garage and a floor structure and then a room and then a mezzanine structure, the mezzanine space, and then the roof structure, it's very, very hard to make those habitable rooms with the mezzanine and keep it at 25 feet. So this idea of creep.
Correct. We won't have any creep. We did design it and we're very careful in addressing the structure. Fortunately, because of how small this is and how short the spans are, we're able to economize on the size of the joist. And that's what helps us make it and accommodate it. The 3 inches, which you mentioned above the 25 feet, is something that with just a slight a shift down, we still have the clearances needed. So, and I do appreciate that you're looking at that because we spent a lot of trying to ensure it. Because as an accessory dwelling unit, you do need to dwell. And it's so small, a loft, or in the terms of how the ordinance would look at that, a mezzanine, is what in many cases are added throughout many carriage houses here in Savannah. And most people don't talk about it, but they are there. So, and we're still below 25 feet, and that's at the highest point. So.
Another question, please. Just, you know, no matter what you do with the massing, you still have this situation where you have very little open space. You know, you have the rail, but where are people going to sit in their courtyard?
The owner has ideas around that. They have a small deck that they use all the time, and they still plan on doing seating. So they will make full use of that courtyard.
I'm just going to suggest if you can find a way to consolidate the stairs in some way to get some more open space. You know, you're asking for a variance, and there's a reason that, you know, the standard is 25% of the site is open. You know, you've whittled away at that because of the stairs and the deck, and there's very little open space. So,
and just to clarify, there is an existing deck off of the house, and we're simply modifying the stair in order to not end up with even more space being lost.
Any additional questions for the petitioner?
Just one last question, Nagel. Have you, and because this ties into what we just reviewed prior, similar situation, we have a big wall. You said you engage with the community. Have you talked to the direct neighbors? You know,
yes.
Have you presented this to them? And what was their
Well, a lot action? Of it just had to deal with the style and the height right at the lane. That was the majority of the comment. The height is not uncommon along lanes to have a large wall for a carriage house. Again, it seems very large because in the perspective, as close as we have it, it reads much larger than it is, but it's not a large building at all. It is a small building with, yes. And again, for fenestrations, what Kevin Rose mentioned, whilst we may say that we can try to put in fire-rated fenestrations, Savannah's development services, in their review, they often take away those at the property line. If it was offset from the property line by a foot or two, they would allow it. But on the property line, they don't.
Last question. How tall is that wall? That is that the same height as the original wall? You see that little piece of brick wall that you have left that is not stuccoed white. Is that the height of the original wall that's
yes,
there
that
right
is
now?
Correct.
Is that the same?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there additional questions for the petitioner? Thank you, Mr. Elder. We do have a number of speaker cards, so we will be keeping you to your 3 minutes. Mr. Jones.
Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. We oppose this proposal in its, as proposed,
We do like the developments that are being suggested in some of the options, including slide 3, which was the dormer window and the shed facing sloping down to the lane. So we would support a continuance. We did meet with the architect and made suggestions, and he seems to be inclined to accept some of them, but obviously he needs more time. But I would not, so my remaining comments address the design before you today, which we oppose completely. A mezzanine in section 13.5, the definition section of the ordinance, says that a mezzanine can be no more than 33% of the area of the room or space in which it is located. That's the definition of a mezzanine. The proposed mezzanine is approximately 45% of the area of the room. I don't have time to go through the calculation. It is here. I believe it is 45%, and I've not included the stair. And arguably, if you added the stair, because the stair, you need the stair to get to the mezzanine, you'd be way over 45. This is not a mezzanine. If it is not a mezzanine, it is a floor. If it is a floor, this is a three-story building. So somehow there was an oversight here, and this needs to be addressed because this is definitely not a mezzanine. Another issue that you need to address is that the exterior expression of the first floor cannot be less than 11 feet, and currently the exterior expression is 9. So that's an absolute rule. This current design does not meet that. It's an easy fix, but it doesn't meet it now. And I agree with staff in terms of those metal seam panels that kind of drip down the side. That's not a permissible wall material. If it's considered part of the roof, then it's not a permissible roof shape because it's a false mansard. But I agree with the staff's recommendations that that could be fixed, then we would look more favorably upon it. The variance should be denied under every single criteria. For example, the lot next to it it's a pair of Italianate townhouses in the front. This is being built on one of those lots. So the other lot has the exact same conditions from a variance perspective. And one of the criteria, literal interpretation of the regulations would not deprive the applicant of rights enjoyed by other properties. Well, the other property, the same size next door, it does not enjoy these rights of a variance. And then the variance shall confer on the applicant's property a special privilege that is denied by this ordinance to the owner of other properties. Yes, the property right next door is denied 79%. So I can go through the other criteria, but it does not meet any of the criteria for a variance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Next we have Victoria Gunther. Sorry, I was on the verge of not doing that correctly. Appreciate it. And just restate your name for the record.
Victoria Gunther. I am Corey Hyland's sister, and I'm speaking today on his behalf. I am a downtown homeowner of 45 years, right down the street. And I've never been in this room until today. But I do concur with his remarks. He says, I wish I could be there in person. I live at 211 East York Street, one door down from the proposed structure. What is being proposed here violates both the ordinance and common sense. I'll let others, Mr. Jones did speak to the details, but on common sense, I ask you, is there any world in which the words visual compatibility would apply to this building? Look at the building. Look at the ones around it. In addition, the zoning code for the historic district clearly prohibits this kind of building. It says the architecture of an accessory building, quote, shall be designed in a similar architectural style as the principal building. I and many others have spent much energy and time and money to protect and enhance our downtown property, all while abiding the rules. Your job as HDBR members is clear. The Savannah Historic District Board of Review was established in 1973 to protect the property associated with the landmark historic district. Nobody comes here to see buildings like that. They come here to see buildings like ours. buildings like this diminish the value of our property and indeed of all of the historic district. Everybody should obey the rules. It's your job to assure that they do. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gunther. Next, we have Mr. Hunsrucker.
Greetings. My name is Jim Hunsrucker. I'm a 36-year resident of the historic district. Just as an example, the lack of visual compatibility can be seen here, with the front of the building not being respected by what's being proposed for the back. Also proving that visually, the whole lane can be seen from Abercorn Street or Lincoln Street. So this proposed structure is whatever it shall turn out to be, will be visible from both directions. And this nice little garage is a new, but it is respecting the contributing buildings. So to make this a little bit shorter, I'll just go to the last slide where you see all the contributing buildings on the lane. And historically, this location has not had, according to the Sanborn maps, any structures on it. And considering this is going to be more than likely continued because of the design is being reconsidered, I would also like to add that the bank of the windows cannot be found on the lane. Also, the horizontal siding or the vertical siding cannot be found. And I would also recommend with this new proposal accessing the roof, because with all the rain that we're having, we do have a lot of leaks in our roof, and accessing the roof is important to the future use of the and maintenance of the building. So I would also recommend that that be considered in the future plans. Thank you.
Thank you. Anna Wright.
Anna Havisham Wright. Since when is a contrasting design style of harsh contrast considered an asset to the historic district? I've worked with infill design in Ireland and in Charleston and here, and you respect certain basic things like proportions, like aligning certain levels. The last thing you do is just bash in there and do everything as different as you possibly can in order to irritate everybody that you possibly can, which is what is happening with this. Also, it's just very badly designed. The garage is 7 feet tall. I mean, you can't do an overhead door as is drawn and have the mechanism and also have room for someone to stand up. You have wooden fire stairs in the courtyard. This is a house that is already divided into two units. If the owners actually just wanted this carriage house to be for their children, then it doesn't need to have a huge kitchen in it and all of this stuff they're trying to cram in with a mezzanine with a 4-foot floor height. It's really pretty awful. Should not be done.
Steve Lieberman.
Hi, I'm Steve Lieberman, and I'd just like to say that I appreciate this discussion. I mean, it's particularly in terms of the ADUs and trying to get additional housing and the growing population here in Savannah. We all know and recognize it. In terms of what we're listening to today, I fully support the continuance of this project. It seems like already, even though they haven't had time to fully address it, that they're already addressing some of these concerns, and I would like to see that go forward and see how that develops. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Edwards.
My name is Steve Edwards, and I represent the Downtown Neighborhood Association. We are opposed to the application for a certificate of appropriateness for the proposed accessory dwelling unit. Objections have been raised by others on the basis that the structure does not meet the visual compatibility criteria in section 7.8.9, and we agree with those objections. We note that the visual compatibility is determined by comparing the proposed structure with, quote, contributing buildings and structures to which it's visually related. Visually related is defined as the relationship between buildings, structures, squares, and places within view of the subject property. The applicant has not identified any contributing structures within view of the proposed structure that bear any of the same visual characteristics. More importantly, the Historic District Board of Review is also required to consider the accessory structure and accessory dwelling unit standards, and these standards are clearly not met. The proposed structure is an accessory dwelling unit, and it must be, quote, designed with a similar architectural style as the principal dwelling. It does not require an architectural degree to see that the contemporary design of the proposed structure is of a fundamentally different architectural style from the architectural style of the principal dwelling. It's not accidental that the applicant makes the effort to identify other, quote, contemporary designs in other parts of the city, which implicitly recognizes that this design is distinct from the principal structure and the other surrounding buildings. If this is a similar architectural style to the existing historic building, it's really difficult to see what wouldn't be. On that basis alone, we think the application must be denied. Thank you.
Thank you. Danielle Oak.
Hello, my name is Danielle Oak. I'm an interior designer here in town. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the commission this afternoon. Thank you very much. I came into Savannah in 2019 to work on a graduate degree at SCAD. I studied architecture and art history here in this exquisite city, which I am thrilled to be in. It's an absolute joy to be here, and so much so that I decided to stay here and make this city my home. As a newcomer, I assumed that a city such as this would have several commissions and organizations that would provide guidelines for the continued building and the design of the city. I am happy to see that this is true, although I am concerned about the proposals that have been brought up over the last several years that fly in the very face of the city's own design standards. When I share Savannah with friends and family, I highlight the fascinating lanes that we have here. As mentioned during this meeting, the character and importance of the lanes are huge. More than mere service passages, these byways carry the unwritten history of how the enslaved wove communities and relationships in their midst. Thus, these lanes are an integral part of the cultural, of the history of Savannah. Our laneways are embedded into our overall architectural fabric, and as such, we should be very, very careful how we change and adapt them. So therefore, the most concerning issue for me today is this structure being proposed. Earlier in today's meeting, Mr. Phelps used the word language with regard to the building plans that he shared. That word refers to the context and visual design of a building, particularly in relation to other buildings. Firstly, I agree with the concise comments that Mr. Jones made moments ago. I argue that the language of the building proposed for 219 East York Lane is inappropriate. Aesthetically, the building bears no resemblance to any other structure within sight. It is visually overbearing and I believe encroaches on more than the square footage that is allowed. I could be wrong on that. I do oppose the proposed carriage house on East York Lane. It is not visually compatible in height or mass with the contributing buildings in view and is inconsistent with the design standards. In closing, I appeal to you as the Planning Commission to consider every change in our city in light of our built heritage. I know this is what you do. I know this is your mission. We are the guardians, and you are the guardians of our city. Builders, architects, and designers have both the privilege and the responsibility of creating structures that meet the needs of residents and visitors alike.
Their work becomes a part of the city's evolving tapestry and shapes an architectural environment that will influence generations to come. As guardians of this legacy, the commission must take its role seriously. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Did we have anyone joining us virtually that has expressed a wish to speak?
No, ma'am.
Thank you. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Jerome Elder, J. Elder Studio. I'd like to thank the public and the various for their various comments. I think based on the comments that we have been hearing, a lot of what we have been doing already, why the continuance is being asked for, is starting to address many of those concerns. So I'd hope that the board will consider giving us an opportunity to continue to explore it. On the variance portion, there was one clarification that I'm hoping will be even more clear if we do have that opportunity, which is that we are currently waiting on a survey of the property. By Sages, which is what we used on ours to calculate the size of the lot is written as 15 foot wide. However, from measurements of the site and throughout taking different points, it's closer to 16 feet. And if that's the case, we will be more than likely within the, and would not need the variance. So that's something that we're hoping for, but we just have not received that final survey yet. So that's just that this is using Sages's, not the actual. And per the other comment about the mezzanine, we did address that the size of the mezzanine to make sure that we brought it down in our revision. So that's, again, something that in a future meeting, the next meeting, we'll be able to address. And lastly, there is one other clarification that I'd like to make about the ADU, a portion of the ordinance, and I think it's something that we can all look at. There is a bit of a contradiction in that the ordinance says guidelines for ADUs, whilst they do exist, and many of them were stated here today, when it's within a historic district with an overlay, the overlay's guidelines are what would supersede and be what we follow. And that's what we based our determination as to doing a contrasting design style. Not doing one that is similar to the main structure. So that's
Thank you, Mr. Elder. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Ms. Nagel, I'll start with you.
I appreciate Mr. Elder's attempt to say, look, this isn't working, so maybe present something else and continue. I'll bring up a few of my just fundamental issues with this. We could deconstruct it all the way to all the standards, but I don't think it's necessary to go that far. I think as a fundamental board decision on based on ordinances and sticking to the rules, we don't have to base this on whether we like contemporary or not, whether we want it or not in Savannah. That it's a whole can of worms, but as a visual compatibility vantage point, and as an ADU, as the ordinance stands, this structure has zero compatibility to its main contributing building. That is not even questionable. So again, we can all opinionate on whether we like contemporary or not, but let's just stick to the matter of as an ADU, it has zero visual compatibility in any architectural form, color, design, nothing of it is compatible to its main building, which is a contributing structure. So if we just stick to that, we're already saying, hey, this isn't, it just doesn't meet the criteria. There is the questionable situation with the mezzanine being that 33% of the area of which it occupies, versus that 45 that Mr. Jones brings up. That is something that I think we need to look at further, because it does make a difference whether it's mezzanine or floor. The variance on the lot coverage, if we do not have that survey and we don't really know if it's 15 or 16, and so we're not really sure if we're asking for that variance or not, I think that as a whole, and I wish I could say, let's continue it, let's tweak it and work with Mr. Elder, who's very cordial. But as a whole, I just don't see this working on a fundamental level as a structure in our National Historic Landmark District. Therefore, I just cannot support it. Thank you.
Ms. Hamer.
No further comment.
Ms. Woodfield.
I agree with Ms. Nagel. I think there's so many concerns about this. I appreciate that you're trying to work with it and massage it, but it just seems such a big building for this very small, narrow lot. And, you know, the design is going the wrong direction. It's building up as high as it can. It's being shoehorned in here, I believe. You can see it. You need a variance. Maybe it can be continued and you can work on it longer, but there are so many issues that have come up. We could go through them all again, but you've just heard them. And as Ms. Nagel says, they're fundamental. They're not opinions from our point of view. They're the ordinances. They're rules that we have to follow. So it's going to be a steep climb to make this an acceptable building that is where you're starting. There's going to have to be a lot of changes. And, is that means for continuance or is that means for saying it needs to be denied and rethought? I think that's a question.
Thank you, Ms. Woodfield. Ms. Rowan?
Mr. Elder, I always love seeing you come in here because I'm always excited about what you're going to present, because I do think that you are an amazing architect and an out-of-the-box thinker and creative. But I do feel like for this particular block, this isn't visually compatible. I think if it were on the corner of Jones and Habersham, where there are those two more modern homes, it would be more in kind with that area. But, and I know that you're talented enough to come back with a different design. So, those are my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Owen. Mr. Helms?
I agree with Sabrina in the sense that there are too many problems here to be solved easily. I would point out that Mr. Elder has the option to come back with a different design, whether we deny it or continue it. And I would therefore recommend that we deny it, because there's too many things that need to be changed for this to be deemed a continuance.
Thank you, Mr. Helms. I'll go around one more time. Ms. Nagel.
No further comment.
Ms. Hamer.
No further comment.
Ms. Woodfield.
No further comments.
Ms. Rowan.
No additional comments.
Mr. Helms.
No further comment.
At this time, I'll open the floor for a motion.
Okay, I'll make the motion. I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review deny the petition of J. Elder Studio, COA 25-002575 for 219 West York Lane, based on the incompatibility of the project with the visual compatibility factors and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
The motion on the floor is to deny the petition based on the applicant's failure to meet the visual compatibility standards. Is there a second?
Nagel, second.
Thank you, Ms. Nagel. Ms. Nagel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Hamer?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Nay.
Mr. Helms?
Aye.
The ayes have it. That application is denied. That brings us to the end of our regular agenda item. Next up, I'm going to give the public a few moments to exit. The next item on our agenda are approved staff reviews, which, as you hopefully have caught on by now, they are now visible online, so we don't have to go through them. Just acknowledge that they are there. Work performed without a certificate of appropriateness. There were none listed this month. Items deferred to staff, same. Nothing was listed this month. As customary under notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments, we have the stamped drawing report, inspections completed by staff, two different sets of those since we didn't meet last month. So you'll see July's and August's attached to this. Is there any other business before we move to adjourn? Miss Melanie?
I just want to take this moment while I really appreciate your service with regards to being volunteers and how crazy this position can be that you are sometimes put into. I really, really, really want to be clear with regards to what some of the rules are regarding being here. I was really disappointed at the respectful comments made to staff. You know, the professional staff, we make our decisions based on policies that are in place. You all are in your roles to either agree, disagree. We don't lose any sleep either way. We just try to present the facts based on what the rules are that we've got to follow. I want to be clear about that, based on what the rules are. So, whether you agree or disagree, that's fine. That's why you are in your capacity that you serve in right now. But just remember, be respectful not only to the petitioners, members of the public, but to my staff, because we work very, very hard. We get inundated at the last minute, sometimes with form letters, form comments, things that you wouldn't believe. Even I have been inundated with hundreds of just emails that are the same thing. So you know the form letters. It's not going to change with regards to what the policies and the national standards are. That's what we look at. We try to be as neutral as possible in order to respect your decisions as professionals that have been appointed by the elected officials. And I want you all to respect my staff that I hire based on their skill set, because I've got a talented group. And I know about architecture from my time at UVA and studying under Dr. Edley to know what the rules of the game are as well. The other thing that I wanted to just be very, very mindful or make sure that I'm on the record about is something that has been on our website, and that is any written comments must be submitted 2 days prior to the scheduled board meeting by emailing the respective department director. The director, not me, because when I get them, sometimes they might get moved forward, sometimes they don't. Remember, I have 14 boards, and I get emails from everybody. Sometimes I see them, sometimes I don't. But if we've got 2 days and it's going to the director, we want to be respectful of everybody's comments because we know that it takes time. If we get anything after that, we will make it part of the record, but it might not be something that is part of your packet that you get because it's just impossible to do that at times. So,
and just so you know, Melanie, too, I did read that. Pamela provided that to me, so I did read it in direct
okay.
at the start of the meeting.
But. Okay, well, great. I appreciate that. We're in the process of getting ready for a GAMPO annual meeting, and we've had a couple of things happen, even with getting, that's the transportation meeting that we've got coming up, but I did want to make sure that I just let you all know that. I mean, we work very hard. We do the best that we can with the resources that we've got. Sometimes we get it right. Sometimes we don't. We don't profess to be perfect, but that's why you all are here. You know, we've got a young staff. They do the best that they can do based on the resources, not only the resources that they have, but based on the information we got at the time that the applications are submitted. And it's a moving target. I mean, people are constantly making changes to things. We have a lot of outside influences that really have no relevance to what we are trying to do. We're just trying to focus on what the rules are of the National Historic Preservation Entity. So I just wanted to make sure that I was very clear with you all regarding that. I want to make sure that my staff knows that I respect and honor what they do. You know, that's why you all are appointed, because you also are experts as well. So thank you for your service, and thank you for indulging me and letting me to.
May I make one comment?
Yes.
Just to piggyback on that. I just know that sometimes in our pre-meetings, things can get heated. It is my feeling that there is always a respectful and kind way to communicate with one another. We're all adults. We're all professionals. And I just don't feel like it needs to be as heated as it gets at times. So I just feel like we all need to have an amount of respect for one another and deliver our comments with a certain amount of kindness and respect. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other?
Ms. Melanie, yes. I would like to speak, Madam Chair, if that's okay. I absolutely respect the staff's work, their reports. I think Caitlin and Kelly do an amazing job. I hope that my question as to, which was a legit question of how does this fit visual compatibility according to staff's report? Just a plain question, very objective. I hopefully did not mean to discredit or challenge. It was legitimately a question, which I wanted to know, like, where's your vantage point of visual compatibility here? Because I actually do go by the staff reports a lot. I actually go through every agenda item by first reading the staff report. I think it's usually very accurate, very helpful, full of information, very well done and thorough. So I hope it didn't come across as me challenging it or questioning it in terms of being disrespectful, and not at all what I meant. I actually was legitimately asking, like, as a visual compatibility factor, because in this particular case, I find it so far-fetched. Where are you coming from? Totally legitimate question, not meant to be satirical or ironic, or dagger in any way. So I want to make that clear. I really respect you guys. I think you put on a lot of hard work, harder than any other years where I used to be sitting in the public wishing that the staff was doing as good of a job as they do now. So, had to be said, it was not meant to be a disrespectful question. It actually was just a question. So thank you. And my apologies, it did not come across as just a question.
Well,
I
really appreciate that, because sometimes I think that people forget just how, we serve a number of boards, and we get a lot. You wouldn't believe the stuff that we have to deal with. I mean, and people are very passionate about historic preservation. They're passionate about a lot of stuff. I mean, I even had a board member that was so passionate, they went up on a construction site and had to be escorted off. All of this happened within a 7-day period of time, so you can appreciate while I'm having this conversation. Because I get those calls, and that's not fun. And there's a balance with regards to your
absolutely.
Passion.
I always actually, with the exception of this one, think that it's pretty dead on and very accurate. The suggestions they help me very much make my decisions or my opinions. In this particular case, I thought it was just worth asking. Where are you looking at this from?
And you got the right to ask the question. I'm not discounting your right to ask the question. I'm just at a point, to be candid with you, of being pretty frustrated with hearing people from third parties making assumptions and allegations about skill set and about where we're coming from. I mean, whether it's editorials and other reports where no one's even kind of reached out or even talked to me. We've got all of these people expressing their ideas and concerns, and I'm asking them, well, where's your degree in architecture or historic preservation? Tell me where that is. You know, everybody's got a right to have an opinion, period. Nobody has a right to feel accosted or disrespectful or just flat out, you know, inundated with bogus comments. So I just want everybody to, you know, understand that I think we are all wanting the same things, which is to make and keep Savannah as beautiful as it possibly can be. I think that people need to understand, though, that with historic preservation, it's changing. I mean, we all know that historic preservations take, you know, it's not, everything's not supposed to look exactly the same. That's not what historic preservation is about at all. But, you know, we respect your decisions as board members. You know, once you make those decisions, we vigorously, you know, defend them if we have to go, whether it's to move to the next level, if we have to go to defend it in court or whatever. Trust me, I can make an argument on either side. But, you know, just please be mindful of staff. Sometimes we get, you wouldn't believe the stuff that we get and have to deal with, even from the other boards that have a lot of times very controversial cases and items that are moving forward. And as people are trying to be more creative because of housing costs, land cost, people are going to come in and ask for things that, you know, even I scratch my head sometimes looking at some of the things that people ask for. I try to be very respectful and to see if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I hate variances. As a perfect example, I absolutely hate them, especially if it's a new build, because that's something that can be controlled. But I have to respect the person that's asking for it. And, you know, we try to do the best that we can do to balance it out when necessary. So, again, I really appreciate the work that you all put into being on this board. I know that it can be tough at times. And last but not least, the other thing, too, is just the attendance. Please know, if we send out a poll or whatever, it takes a lot to pull these meetings together. So if I have to move a meeting, remember, I've got a clock that's ticking. You know, once it gets agendaed, we got, you know, once we get it, we have 45 days to make a decision. If nothing happens, then I have to approve it. So that's the other thing to be very mindful about when we are doing these meetings. If I know in advance that I'm not going to have a quorum and I need to move a meeting a couple of days, then I've got plenty of time to do that and still stay within that window. So you can give us your opinions with regards to what needs to happen on a particular case. So please, please, please be mindful about that with regards to meetings. Know that if you are not going to be at a meeting, you're supposed to let the chair know. And she lets me know as well as the staff know if we need to make some adjustments. So again, thank you again, and I appreciate you allowing me to chat with you.
Thank you, Melanie. Thank you. Is there any other business to be discussed? All right. Well, hearing no other business, we are adjourned.